Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for January the 21st, 2022. This is episode number 94. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Winnebago ERV concept, the Airstream E-Stream concept, and Volkswagen's reviving the E-Up. I'm Don McKeone, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the indefatigable Tom Logney, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mirthful Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of the AutoSpec Studios. He also puts together veritably verdant videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Okay, so last week we started doing a new segment called Comment of the Week, or COTW for short, in which we share, as you might have guessed, the comment of the week. So this week's comment comes to us from last Friday's live stream on YouTube. I don't even remember what the trigger for this was, but maybe somebody else does.
Kyle and I were talking about on-site battery storage and okay. How it helps DC fast charging, you know, reduce demand charges.
Okay. So it got somebody going by the letters LRS going a little bit, and they said somewhat incoherently, liberalism pipe dream that costs more to produce and how fail. How much carbon emissions does one of these cocoa of junk cost? Idiots cut their head off to cure a headache. Liberalism is a disease. So
what did we say?
Something triggered it.
Oh my goodness.
So I wasn't exactly, just reading the comment, you know, last night again, I wasn't exactly positive, but it sounded like to me like he was insinuating that carbon emissions to manufacture EVs were greater than one might save over its useful lifetime. I don't know. Was that what you guys?
Probably the carbon emissions to manufacture the big battery on-site energy storage, because I mean, that's specifically what we were talking about, but it's hard to get into LRS's head at this point.
Okay, but it was an amusing
comment.
And
I don't want to get
to LRS. No, yeah, stay yeah. Well away.
And everyone's welcome to have great opinions and share them with us as long as, yeah. So anyway, let's move on. If you have a great comment, We'll share it hopefully with you next week. Hopefully it'll be understandable. But anyway, so what we're driving, let's talk about what we've been driving this week. I guess, Martin, you're still COVID positive or something. Yeah. So you haven't been doing anything. You've been stuck inside the house. So you're I don't know what's going on with your car.
Yeah, well, my wife hasn't caught it. So myself and our three-year-old are really positive in terms of the home tests. The positive line is very strong. It's not starting to fade yet.
You feel good though?
I feel fine. I was way more ill in December and that wasn't COVID.
Right.
I had my booster Christmas Eve, so I feel like it's fresh. You know, I feel like it's fresh in my bones. And get your booster, kids. Get it, because I've got a cold and a runny nose, sore throat in the mornings. As the day goes on, the sore throat disappears. And our little lad, he's had a bit of a cough, and that's it. My wife hasn't caught it at all. So either she had it when she had a cold last week but wasn't testing as regularly, so she was patient zero, or I'm about to give it to her and then be in the doghouse for a week. But no, so I've been cooped up for a week and will be for a while longer, properly just staying away from people. It's not fair to even go for like a walk in the park or something. I just stay well away. And
right.
Yeah, so, but feeling good.
So when last we left you, your MGZS was filling up with water and stuff. So is it in the garage, or is it like at a, where is that?
It's still there. So they are very apologetic.
Okay.
MG still have the ZSEV. They did what they described as level one tests, which I think is pouring water into things like the panoramic roof, sunroof drains, like the scuttle drain at the bottom of the windscreen. They described it as what they normally do because they took the seats out and the carpet out. The whole thing is soaked inside. There's no holes in the floor. It's only 18 months old, no corrosion. But all the usual places, they can't find it. So now they're thinking, is it some body panels that haven't been welded together properly or something. Uh-oh. So the car is in. It's still with MG. It's in pieces. They've had it a week now. They called me this week to say, how long can we keep it for? And we've got another couple of cars in the driveway. Right. So I said, keep it as long as you want. Please
and you
give
aren't
it
going
back.
Anywhere.
So. No. Please give it back when it's no longer a boat.
Right. So hopefully they'll give you a new carpet too then? Is that...
It cleaned up because when it was first wet, I wanted to make sure that I hadn't done something stupid like leave a window open or something. This was Boxing Day when it was. So I got the wet vac on it and just dried the whole thing out, put a dehumidifier in for the night. So it got all the water out of the carpets. It was like dirty road water. So that's why I think it's coming up from somewhere. But it was pretty clean and not too stinky. And then the next time I went for a drive, it filled up again. So I think it should be all right. But hey, it's all under warranty. It's a new car, so hey, it is what it is. It shouldn't cost me anything.
Right on. All right. Hey, Jordan. Jordan's joining Kyle there at Spec Studios. All right. So Kyle, you were driving your smart car earlier this week. I see, and it's been screaming at you. And you have a video up on Out of Spec Reviews. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on with that?
Can I just say that both of these guys look pretty fresh-faced for what was a party last night?
lots of beer. You should have seen this guy.
I don't know how you're looking so fresh-faced early. I mean, it's afternoon here, but it's early where you are, and you guys were christening your new office, on the rumor mill.
A little beer run never hurt anyone, but Starbucks can cure it, that's for sure.
You guys look good.
So yeah, the smart car, we were driving it around earlier and for the last 2 years, I mean by earlier, and every time it would get below 45 degrees Fahrenheit, it would, anytime we were above 30 miles an hour, just scream at us. I don't know how to describe the noise, but it sounded like something inside the air vents was going crazy. It's this high-pitched, very loud, very annoying noise, and it's happened for the last 2 winters. And then I was driving down the road with Timon the other day and we're like adjusting the air vents. We're like, we got to figure this out. No one's going to know how to work on this smart car. And it turns out that it was the windshield was not properly sealed because Timon said, why don't you just push on the windshield? And I pushed it out a little bit and the noise changed completely.
Right.
And so I think what happens is when it gets cold, the seals shrink a little bit and then it gets better.
Right on. And yeah, that video was up on your channel. I believe Alyssa was in charge of that one.
Alyssa presented that. Yeah, trying to get more people involved here, especially right. for the stuff that we shoot in Fort Collins. You know, from our side, having this new dedicated space is, you know, we're just trying to change things up for the new year. We have a pretty good action plan, new channels, new stuff. It's all kind of awkward right now, but we hope in 12 months from now, everyone will have a really good, consistent understanding of all the content that we're trying to produce out of here.
Right.
Hey guys, and welcome to another Out of Spec Reviews video. My name's Alyssa.
Hey Alyssa.
There we go. That's the video.
speaking of Alyssa, yeah, there she is, and there's a smart car. And that was I watched this yesterday, and I thought it was really interesting because I heard the noise, and I'm like, I had no idea what that was. I couldn't tell.
I was trying to go like fan speed wouldn't adjust it. Temperature wouldn't adjust it. I thought it was because it happened in cold temperatures. I thought that it was only when we were using the heating system. So it was like a flap in the air conditioning system that would divert to the heating. This right. is what I was thinking. I'm like, no one's ever going to figure out how to fix this. And it turns out to be a windshield seal. So right. now we're probably just going to probably just get a new windshield on it or something. We'll smash right. it for a video and put a new windshield on it.
I mean, if it was me, I would just like take off that windshield, you know, but with piano yep. wire, you just go around it. That's how we used to do it. And yep. then, you know, take all that gunk off and then re-put a new bead of sealant mm-hmm. down and just stick it right back on there.
Dominic, this is YouTube, so we need to smash stuff.
Oh, right. Oh, that's a good point, right?
We remove the windshield altogether, and then we wear race car helmets everywhere.
That's
keep the top down.
A true smart open air experience. Yeah. We put the roof down, windshield out, doors off.
Right. But how do you need to find an interesting way of breaking the windshield without hurting anybody or the rest of the car?
Well, it gets better views if we hurt someone.
And you've got to get some like old school motorcycle glasses from like the 20s.
Yes.
Yeah. and drive with those. I got to ask you a question. I see you've got temps on the back of it in this video, at least. Are you yep. going to get the same vanity plate you had in North Carolina?
That is the idea. We have been waiting for the plates to come in, and we were, you know, talking to the dealer, and they're like, they're on their way, they're on their way. They're like 3 months overdue. And I'm like, you know, me, I'm just like, well, if we get a ticket, you're paying for it. So we're just driving it.
And, so if you don't know, Kyle had personalized plates on the smart car that said dumb. So it was like smart, dumb, which was the best personalized plate you could get on a smart car. So when I saw the temps on that, I said, oh, no, don't tell me you're not going to have the dumb plates anymore. So hopefully you'll get those again.
It's really up to Alyssa. She gets to decide the plate. We were thinking dumb again, or she had another idea. I don't know. But we just need to get plates on it entirely. So this is going to be the topic of next week, to just go to the DMV and figure out whatever we got to do to get plates on it. Because, yeah, this is very complicated in Colorado, apparently.
Right. All right. Oh, actually, I forgot to ask. Someone's mentioning congrats on the EV News expansion, Martin, and thanks for 4 years of updates. So it was your four, and we'll get back to you. We have some more to talk about with Kyle about what he's been driving this week. But so it's been 4 years of you doing your EV News Daily podcast, right?
Yeah, goodness. Tuesday was the fourth anniversary. That podcast was 6 minutes long. Now I'll chat for 25, 30 minutes a day about what's happening with electric vehicles and how we power them. And yeah, that first run of shows, there was a lot of Tesla is doing something and everyone else is promising something. And fast forward 4 years, we've now got still people are, you know, lots of people are doing things and lots of people are still promising. But there's so much more to actually, you know, we're driving vehicles and talking about them rather than this thing is coming. It was so much jam tomorrow,
right?
4 years ago. I listened back to those early shows and there was just so much announcement kind of stuff I was talking about. These things are on the way. So, yeah, 4 years of chatting every day, most of that 7 days a week. Just talking about electric cars. So that 1,350 podcasts over the last 4 years, and because there's been interviews and specials and stuff like that, and I must have chatted for a fair few hours about EVs, I'm guessing.
So and you're going to start a new phase with video soon?
Yeah, you finally wore me down. Well, Carl wore me down, and then you chipped in, and so yeah, that starts Monday. I was going to start it this week, but I've had the COVID, so that starts next week. But yeah, finally putting the news on YouTube.
Okay.
But short, like 5 minutes, like going back to the future. So yeah,
Martin, you really need it to be 8 minutes.
Oh, why?
Then you can run mid-roll ads. You really want the Rolls-Royce Silent Shadow, so you need mid-roll ads.
So the podcast will be 8 minutes in a second, so I can monetize those mid-rolls?
Yes.
But
it has to be 8 minutes. Yeah.
Like, that'll be it. So no one wants a half hour of me talking. I mean, look, we're here for an hour and a half every Friday. That's enough of me on the internet. But anyway.
Well, I've listened to probably 1,000 of those 1,300 shows.
That explains a lot sometimes.
That's why I'm mentally insane now. It will ruin your life. And it's been incredible to see the four-year journey come. I was one of the early listeners. It was one of the only EV podcasts not covering just Tesla. That was the big thing for me when you did this. And 4 years ago, it was right when I was leaving Tesla. I used to work for them. And that's when I was interested in what everyone else was doing. So pretty amazing. I mean, we started around the same time doing this stuff. And pretty incredible journey that EV News Daily has been on. But I think the video side is when you're going to be living in the mega mansion.
Yeah, I can see you doing some reviews and test rides. That's what I'm really looking forward to. Hey, this is going to be on your EV News Daily podcast. Same YouTube channel?
Same YouTube channel. And actually, after it was something that that you said a couple of weeks ago, Kyle, that you that your commute isn't long enough now for my half hour rambles every day. So that's why we're launching a new show on Monday called EV News Briefly.
Just for me.
Yeah, which
you may as well just call it Kyle's EV News Daily.
I'm going to say, like, morning, how are you? Hopefully Alyssa and the dogs are okay. I know you're really into the Citroen Ami, so here's some news. It's basically a personal service just for you. Anyone else can listen, and it's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 minutes long just for people with short commutes. So that starts Monday, and it's going to be up for breakfast time in the US. Mix sort of midday here, but it'll be a breakfast show in the US, so you can start your day with it.
That's awesome. And I'd like to echo Kyle's comments, Martin. I've been listening to you for years. What a great job. I mean, if any of our listeners hasn't checked out what Martin does over there, you have to, especially now that you have the option of watching video. Awesome job. Congratulations that you're moving over to video. I think you're gonna blow up even more, which you don't even need to do because everybody listens to you as it is. Right. But
thank
congrats.
You.
All right. So speaking of like expansion and podcasts and everything, Kyle, you have a new channel of your ever expanding Out of Spec universe. Out of Spec Scoots. That's Scoots with a Z on the end. And if you can, I found it yesterday by just Googling, you know, Out of Spec Scoots.
We hit 100 subscribers yesterday. That's why we had our big celebration here with all the beer. 113 to wait. That's awesome.
All right. So yeah, and I watched all of these videos yesterday too. And Jordan is in some of them. He's joining you there, and he and your dad actually kicked off this channel with his own reviewing his own e-bike down there in Florida.
My dad was our resident e-bike expert. I had never ridden one until I made that video, and we had started a channel on something I'd never experienced. But I knew a lot of people were getting into e-bikes. I knew a lot of people want to learn more about micromobility, scooters, you know, transit. You know, for my thing is we live in like the most bike friendly part of the country here.
Okay.
And we should take advantage of all the tools that we have to commute around other than just vehicles. So, you know, once the weather's a little bit nicer, I'll start commuting on e-bike back and forth. And Out of Spec Scoots is, yeah, I mean, we don't need to make an ad campaign for it, but it'll grow. It'll happen. We have a main presenter who's still not starting until Monday. So we've just been kind of keeping the channel going ourselves, but we have a dedicated person working on this. A lot of our viewers will probably know Brandon Flash. He's going to come out and do a lot of the reviews on this stuff too. So between Gary and Brandon, they'll run that channel. But we got a whole lineup of them over here. But Jordan, do you want to bring over the Ariel, the sick one that
Ariel?
Yeah. We just unboxed this incredible one that looks insane. I don't know how else to describe it, but
so This is great. While he's getting that, I'll just say, if you're watching us on YouTube or Twitch, we're showing the video of from one of Kyle's trip to CES, where he got to drive he drove the Citroen ME, but the same company also makes bicycle motors, and they make motors for like Mercedes-Benz, but they make e-bike motors and had a bunch of different e-bikes, and Kyle tries them out there, and yeah. So, yeah, but let's have a look at the one you have in the studio, man. That looks
This is the nicest one sick. We have so far. I think we have like 50 bikes coming, whole bunch arriving. This is the Ariel X-Class 52-volt Ariel.
Yeah, Ariel Rider. This is a nearly 1 kilowatt-hour battery. Makes 2 kilowatts power, which is the most we've seen in e-bikes.
Yeah,
Like 500 or 750 watts.
Hold on.
So they got 2C batteries, basically? Like, I mean, like the power output is like 2C.
Yeah, that sounds about right, Dom.
All right, that's crazy.
Yep,
it even came with a vial of touch-up paint.
So really? Yeah, this is Jordan's kind of bike. And then let's show the other end of the spectrum.
So what's the retail on that?
How much is that one? Yeah, $2,600.
Okay.
And so that's the most expensive one that we have on the review. I mean, really, at the end of the day, we are trying to do stuff that people are actually buying. So that was like the fun one. But this is like a great bike that people will actually buy. This is the Ride One Up. This is not the 700 series. This is the Core
500.
Yeah, the Core 5. Yeah. And so this is like an everyday basic, think Toyota Corolla of e-bike.
Right.
We're still learning the lineups, but this is relatively mundane materials, but it still has like a nice Shimano 7-speed.
It looks decent.
750-watt peak motor in the rear, and no suspension, no lights, nothing fancy, but it's just a good commuter. So, something like this all the way up to the Ariel we're reviewing. We do scooters as well. And one of the things I thought would be kind of fun, especially in the warm weather, once we get some better stuff, is we'll do like a little one-minute thing on one of the bikes every week or something like this and tell you a little bit about them, because honestly it's a world that I didn't even know I would be interested in. You guys know me, I like to drift around and I'm not so concerned about last mile, let's save the planet stuff, but this is really transformative to life. We've been riding them to lunch just downtown.
We'd ride them
through the hallways, down the elevator, out the door. It's been amazing. John's commenting we should do folding EV bikes. We have a few here. We have a really cool Hay Bike Ranger that folds like three ways, two ways.
Two ways, yeah.
It's awesome.
And Kyle, somebody else pointed out you should cover conversion kits as well. That would be really interesting. I know it's a whole nother ball game for you, but a lot of people are interested in those conversion kits. They don't want to go out and spend $2,000 on a bike or whatever. They have a bike they love, but they'd like to add an e-assist. So consider that in the future, because I think that would be something you'd get a lot of views on.
Yeah, we're all in. That sounds great. I mean, really, at the end of the day, we will produce as much content as we can make. Again, we'll have a dedicated person to this channel who's an expert on bikes, just pumping the content on them. And then you and I will go and goof around with them, basically. We'll do the stupid stuff. I want to drag race all of them, but I know that's not accurate because everyone weighs differently. But
you got to go over some sweet jumps.
Yes, we need some sweet jumps. We need a ramp off our roof, actually.
I just think it's funny. The Ariel has a 1,000-watt nominal, 2,000-watt peak power, which is crazy.
It's huge,
it's like,
right?
It's like the straight-line muscle car of the bikes.
Can you even drive that in the States, like on the street? Is that legal?
So this is the funny thing. Legally, these are all Class 3 e-bikes, which means they have throttle up to 20 miles per hour and then pedal assist to 28, which means if you're pedaling, the motor can assist you to 28. Then it shuts off all electric. Every e-bike company is like, well, if you just put in this code, then it'll be like 50.
Cheat codes. E-bike cheat codes.
Yeah. So like, this is the equivalent of like Dieselgate, like this massive crazy, but it's for bikes, no one cares. So like, I think one of these bikes will do 60 miles an hour if you just crank it. Which I'm so into.
Which is right crazy.
On. Okay.
But it's like I go from that Ariel to one that has only like 500 or 750 watts. I'm like, oh, this is so slow. So I do have to ask the people in Europe, how do you do 2 watt? Like, what is the ride?
Because legally, that's what they're limited to. They also have cheat codes there.
Yeah.
You've got to do 20 quarter-mile drag races.
That'll be very cool.
You've got to do that.
Yeah. So we have – I don't think we've told anyone yet, but part of what the school has here, which we haven't – even been to the strip yet. We're going on Sunday to check it out. Basically, we said, can we drag race cars on your decommissioned airstrip? And they didn't say no. Oh. So Brian listens
they
to
have
this
a decommissioned
podcast.
Air?
Brian,
what?
We really need to use the airstrip. Might have to convince someone to repave it. But yeah, we're going to go check it out on Sunday.
Okay. I'm all for sure you could probably drive e-bikes there.
Yeah. I think that's fine. I think it's just a little cracked up, but I don't know how long it is. I want to say it's 3/4 of a mile, something like that. So you could do a half mile drag.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty awesome.
I know. It would be insane if we could do, because then watch out, CarWow. We're coming with all the drag races.
Right. That's right. CarWow is great for that.
Move over.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So it's Tom. So Tom, you've had an interesting week. Let's start with talking about Ford. So you've ordered a Ford F-150 Lightning, and you were hoping to be on the first wave of, you know, pre-orders to convert to deliveries or whatever, but that didn't happen. But you did get some, you did hear from Ford this week?
Yeah. So the way Ford's doing it is, based on your reservation number, they're sending out invitations to convert your reservation to an order. I didn't make the first wave. It came out about 2 weeks ago, I think. And Ford had told me, they really didn't tell the public this, but I was asking, am I going to be in the first wave or not? Because I reserved it pretty much right after reservations opened. And I was surprised I wasn't in the first wave. But I guess there were a lot of people on the button as soon as you could reserve it. But Ford said to me, look, we looked at your where you are in line. It looks like you'll probably make the second wave. And what we're going to do is we're going to send out invitations every 2 weeks so we don't just get swamped with tens of thousands of people trying to configure and probably take the Ford's website down. So yesterday I got my email. Congratulations. You've been invited to configure and order your Ford F-150 Lightning. And that screenshot there is the picture that I got after I ordered it. That's my truck. I got it in the black metallic. It's a Lariat, and I got pretty much everything I wanted in it. The only thing I didn't get that I was thinking about getting is max tow package. I have the tow technology package. Now, I'm not going to be towing. I don't.
Tom, you need the max tow. We got to do some towing.
I knew Kyle was going to give me hell about that.
Are you crazy? You got to get the max tow.
Okay, so I could probably change it, Kyle, and here's why I didn't. My current configuration is like $79,350, something like that. If I add max tow, it's $80,034. Okay, big difference, right? You know, big deal. If the Build Back Better plan does get go through, the entire rebate that I would get, the entire tax credit, I would lose because I'm $34 over. Now, it's $12,500. It's not chump change. If it was a couple thousand dollars, I might say, let's go for it. So that max tow package, Kyle, could cost me $12,500.
Yeah. So what else can you remove? Can you get the garbage little wheels? Can you do something?
The Ford is making this so streamlined. It's basically one package. And then the only thing I added was a bed liner.
Well, did you make a video on the configurator? Because I don't believe it's open to the public.
It is open to the public.
Okay, we got to play around with that.
You can go play around with it, and you can see it. And that Ford has made it very, there's not the only options you can really check are like floor mats, and you can have a built-in.
So they make you choose the baseline, and then, but that's so different than the combustion F1.
I can't change the interior. There's only one choice of interior. I can't change the packages, really. Like it's everything's included and that's it.
Can we just say too how nice the F-150 is? This is the same cab basically as the combustion F-150, which we've reviewed multiple times. Jordan, you've been in the electric one. I've been in the electric one now. This is one of the coolest trucks ever. I can't wait for it. And it's going to be fast and do all this stuff, but they're just so nice to drive F-150s. It is one of the best vehicles on sale, in my opinion.
So we just got to get Ford to tell them what your situation that, because that applies to a lot of people. So they need to just reduce the price by $34.
I've seen other people post that same comment that, I didn't get max tow package because it puts me at $80,034. So somebody commented, we'll just give you delete the bed liner. I could do that.
We'll just do a bread liner later.
I could do that. So I can still play with this. But the thing is, like the max tow package, I don't even know exactly what it adds, because when you click on information, it doesn't tell you what it does extra. And I have the tow technology package. Maybe it just bumps up. You can tow a little bit more weight.
In the combustion world, it gives you max trailer cooling. It gives you different rear suspension, and maybe an extra leaf in the back. So there's hardware changes on the combustion side for cooling. Yeah. I wonder if that's the case where there's a drivetrain and thermal management differentiation with max tow, then whatever you got to do to get that would make sense.
Right on. Doc Tautu says he may have to reserve an F-150 because Chevy messed up with the Avalanche body style. I was just reading yesterday, they did that body style like that, not to make it look like an Avalanche so much, but it's actually more aerodynamic that way. It helps the airflow and keeps the range up to where they want it. They have like close to, I think they were saying like 400 miles of range with the big battery on the Silverado EV. So that's why they're saying they have that little triangle thing on the back. I don't know.
Yeah, Kyle, but that's silly. Screw the range. Give me a truck that works. Ford gets it.
Right.
The F-150 is going to be inefficient. Maybe it will be. I don't know. But
right. We'll see.
I'm sure it'll be inefficient.
We need to put it on to our 70 mile an hour range test, which Tom.
We need to talk about this because I've been so excited to hear what Tom has to say.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the first thing I do. I swear, when I get my F-150 Lightning, I think like the day I get it, I'm going to do the range test, and then put some weight in the back and do it again. So I have so many things that I want to do with the F-150 Lightning. I can't wait to get it more so than for me to own it and drive it, because I I've said here, I also have a reservation for a Rivian R1T, which I got that email. They said, I'm going to get that the end of the year, fourth quarter of 2022. So I'll have two trucks. I only need one. So I'm going to keep both of them for a little period of time and then decide which one I keep, and the other, whichever one I don't, I'm going to sell. I'll probably announce it here because you won't be able to get either one at that point unless you've ordered it. So
right. You'll be able to sell it.
We'll see. But I'll definitely sell one of them. And, I love the F-150 Lightning. I love the Mega Power Frunk. I would use that thing so much. But I'm concerned that it's too big for me. I've always had Toyota Tacomas, which are small trucks. My wife drives the truck a lot. I don't know how comfortable we're going to be with that. It might just be too big as because I use this as a daily driver. It's not like I don't have a construction company or anything, So we'll see. The Rivian might fit what we're doing more, but I have to have both vehicles, drive them for a while, see which one we like better, and then we'll decide which one we're going to move. But we'll be able to make some cool content when I have both trucks. I'll hook up with Kyle. The two of us will do some things together with both of the trucks, and I'm sure we're going to be able to put out some really cool stuff.
And you have a Cybertruck reservation as well, right?
I do, but
for, you know, whenever that
I might
happens.
Have to pass that along to my offspring.
Well, I was just thinking, well, that and the Silverado EV both have the rear steer option. So yeah. It's although it's a bigger, they're bigger trucks, they'll drive a little smaller.
Yeah. Well, I think people are going to be putting their Cybertruck reservations in their wills and passing them down. So, like, you know, I may not get one, but my grandson will get one for damn sure. You know.
I love it. Tiana here thinks that you're going to sell the Rivian. Okay. Interesting.
We'll see. Whichever one. And my wife's going to be part of the equation too, because she's going to be driving it also. So whichever one we both, well, actually, right. She's probably going to make the entire decision, but we'll see.
Right on.
So, yeah. So we got off on this tangent talking about range. And what we're getting to is the fact that this week I was out in Arizona with Lucid. And I was able to grab a Lucid Dream Edition range and do the Inside EV's 70-mile-an-hour highway range test, which I did. It took me forever, but I did it. And I want to manage expectations here now. People are going to be posting nasty comments. I'm not going to reveal it right here on the podcast because I'm still editing the video, and I don't want to put out all the results and then nobody's going to watch the video on Inside EVs. After all, Inside EVs, you know, pays me to go do these range tests. I can't throw the information out right now, but we'll talk a little bit about what went on and
maybe some hints.
We'll get some hints. The biggest hint I'll say is it went further than I expected it to. Lucid uses the EPA 5-cycle range test when they certify their vehicles. As we've talked about here before, and we've written on Inside EVs, the EPA allows OEMs to choose which range testing protocol they want. There's a 2-cycle test and a 5-cycle test. If you use the 2-cycle test, you only do two tests, and then you have to discount your results by 30%. So let's say you run these two tests and the vehicle shows it has a 300-mile range. You've got to cut 30% off of it, 90 miles, and then you certify it at 210 miles. That's because the way the tests are done, they're not like real world. They're on a dyno. There's not cold weather. You're not going up inclines. You don't have air conditioning on or heating.
And a lot of them don't even test the cars in person. They just submit the coast down data and the efficiency, and then the spreadsheet spits out a number.
Yeah. So right. You send that to the EPA, and then the EPA looks at it and either says, okay, we accept this, we certify it, or they go back to the manufacturer and they say, we want more data. And even when if they certify it, the EPA then may do the test themselves. The EPA doesn't range test all the cars that are out. Sometimes they just accept what the manufacturer provided and that's it. But sometimes the EPA does their own test to make sure it's fine. So getting back to this, Lucid uses the 5-cycle test. Very few manufacturers use that. Tesla does, Polestar does, Audi does, Rivian now does, but most everybody else uses the 2-cycle test because it's easier, it's cheaper. The thing is, you typically get certified at a lower range rating. The 5-cycle test usually produces a better or higher range rating. So when we do these range tests on vehicles that have used the 5-cycle EPA, Kyle and I know we're not going to hit the EPA range certification because it's an inflated number. Like all the Tesla vehicles we test, we're pretty consistent. They're either 12 or 13% below EPA range when Kyle and I do the range test. So it's right on the nose. So I went into this saying, okay, it's 5-cycle, it's EPA range rated at 520 miles. And the interesting thing is not just the combined number on the Lucid Air Dream Edition range, the highway, the city, and the combined were all 520 miles. That's really rare. You know, usually the city is more, highway is less. So in any event, so going into this, I said, okay, 10 to 13%. If it's 10%, that's 52 miles. So if I knock that off, we're looking at what, 468, 470. So I said, okay, that's my goal. If we do 468, Lucid did a good job. If we hit 480, they did an excellent job. If I end up with like 445, 450, I'm going to be a little disappointed. But when we do these range tests, we're not rooting for anyone. We just want results. And, we try to play it straight down the middle.
Kyle, we can't impact the results in any way. The car just does what the car does. We just happen to be the little piece of meat driving it.
Exactly. And I think sometimes that gets lost. Sometimes we get comments where people, think we're rooting for one car or trying to get more. I don't care how far I go. I just want to try to conduct the test as fairly as I can. We're not getting paid to do this. You know, we do get the Lucid did pay my airfare to fly me to Arizona to do this, which is totally normal. In we get the OEMs pay to fly us everywhere. Next week, Kia is paying my airfare to fly me to San Francisco to do the EV6 first drive. So whenever you travel for an OEM to do any kind of review, your expenses are always covered, just hotel and airfare. So I want to put that out there. Lucid did pay my hotel and airfare for this 3-day trip to Arizona. And we did it in Arizona because if you remember, I did the DC fast charging test back at the end of November. And then I set up a range test in December in Northern California, where Lucid's headquarters is. And what happened was, when I had set it up, as we were getting closer, we noticed that whole time I was going to be there, it was going to be pouring rain. We really can't do the range test in the rain because the rain cuts down on the efficiency. And so we then said, okay, we need to reschedule. But then Christmas came and I said, okay, right after Christmas, let's do it. Then I got COVID. So this thing has just been going on and on and on. And I've had some people say, oh, you know, you promised this. Why haven't you done it? Is there some problem? Is Lucid now backing out and saying you can't? No, Lucid's been all along saying, you come whenever you want to come. But so then after I really started thinking about it, I said, I think it's better if we do it in Arizona because I can find roads that don't have as much traffic. You know how hard it is to maintain 70 miles an hour on like congested highways? And in California, I have courses here, like the New Jersey Turnpike's great for it. It always moves, even during rush hour. There's only a couple areas where it might get jammed up every now and then. So that's where I do them here. We chose to do it in Arizona, not far from Lucid's manufacturing Amp1 plant in Casa Grande. So it happened this week. I can tell you this, and I said this in one of my tweets. Martin, I could have flown from New Jersey to London in a shorter time than it took me to drain the air's battery, driving at 70 miles an hour.
You could have come to see me in that time.
Exactly. It took longer. So, it exceeded my expectations. We didn't hit, I will say, we didn't hit the EPA range certification. I mean, that would have been amazing if it did that with a 5-cycle test. We didn't hit the EPA range certification, but it far exceeded my expectations.
And it was more than the next longest, which it'll be the Model S, which is 405 on the EPA. So yeah, it's more than 405, right? Can you say that? It's more than 405.
Oh, absolutely. And forget that I recently range tested the new 2021 Model S Plaid. Now that's not a direct comparison, but just to say, I think the EPA is 348, I think, or 350, somewhere around there. And I did 300 miles on the nose, and it was like 12 or 13% less. What I really need to do, or Kyle, one of us has to do a Model S long range, the brand new one, not the Plaid, because that one's the one that's rated. Is it 402 or 405?
I think it might be 405, and they just call it Model S these days, don't they? But you've got to test that one.
Exactly.
That's
the longest range Model S. It's not going to do, you know, I would bet right now, take the EPA range rating and whack off between 10 and 13%, and that's where it's going to end, because we've seen this on every Tesla we've done. And Kyle and I have range test, you know, the Model 3 numerous times, Model Y numerous times, Model S. So, you know, it always ends up right around there. And I would have had to have achieved with the Lucid Air 4.41 miles per kilowatt hour to hit 520. That's what the EPA range certification is. I did better than 4, I'll say that.
Right.
Okay. So wait, we can officially say, at least, I know the number. We can't share the number. Tom, you're impressed. I'm impressed. But we can say it's the longest range you've ever tested, right?
Longest single range I've ever tested.
Well, here we go. That's the headline. That's the drop in the bucket for everyone. The Lucid Air has the longest range inside EVs has ever tested.
Can we say whether it beat its EPA number?
I just said that it did not.
I'm sorry.
It did not beat its EPA number. That would I've never seen a car that's done 5-cycle tests match its EPA number at a constant 70 miles an hour. And you have to remember, if we drove it 20 miles an hour, it would beat its EPA number. I almost think this thing could do 1,000 miles if you were to drive it 20 miles an hour. on a, closed track. So, you know, we say, you know, the range test is a specific range test that Kyle and I do, 70 miles an hour. We set all the cars up the same way so we can compare them side by side. But, you know, if you like to drive 85 miles an hour, you know, you're not going to hit what I hit on this range test.
Right.
But if you drive 70, depending on the course, you will. Now, I will say one thing. This wasn't a perfectly flat course. The best course we could pick out still had a 600-foot gain of elevation, and I did a 110-mile loop. So I did like 4.5 of those. So every time I came around, I had to climb 600 feet, which isn't crazy, but right. I think that still robbed me of about 5 to 10 miles.
Yeah. Well, just to be totally transparent, you went up and then you also lost 600 feet, but the inefficiencies of having to output more power is what led to more heat loss. But then again, you used less power on the other end. So it's actually not that big of, it's enough. It's probably negligible in the test, but I would say, eight miles at most.
Yeah. At this long, when you're talking about, you know, the amount of range that I did, Kyle, even a 1%, change really adds up. So it was, and as Kyle mentioned, we do these loops. Kyle and I always do these loops. So we start and finish at the same location. Motor Trend did they were the first ones to actually drive the air on a long distance trip. And they drove from LA to San Francisco, point A to point B. We don't do range tests like that because the elevation changes, really can affect, or even you might wind have direction. A tailwind the whole way. Yeah. So we do the loop. So if we're getting a headwind for half the trip, we're getting a tailwind for half the trip. It tries to work things out. And when Motor Trend did it, they finished up with, I think it was 406 miles or 404 miles, but they still had like 5% or something.
Let's be honest, it wasn't a range test.
It wasn't a range test, but I want to throw it out there as a range test. What they did, they finished up with 406, and the car was estimating like 75 miles of range left. But they were in stop-and-go traffic, lower speed, higher speed. It wasn't a constant range test. But I just want to note, somebody else out there did a quote-unquote range test, not controlled like what we do here.
I wouldn't even think about that as being an accurate study.
So maybe I missed
it. You know, somebody's going to say, oh, Motor Trend did this already.
I want to at least bring it up and point out it's different. How this needs to happen.
So maybe I missed it. Did you say what the temperature was yesterday in Arizona?
Yeah, it wasn't ideal either. We started out, it was only a little over 50 degrees, which isn't the best. I mean, it's not terrible, but when I finished up, it was 69, I think was the highest it hit. So, you know, for most of the day, it was good. And I had to use air conditioning because the air has that giant glass roof. And, you know, when you have direct Arizona sunlight, even if it's only 68 degrees, you know, it bakes in. So the whole trip, we always do this. We always set the HVAC to about 68 degrees, whether it's heating or cooling, put it on fan speed 1 or 2. I actually had to put it on 3 for a while because I was getting too hot.
The results are skewed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I already got that. I already got a couple tweets from people that we've heard of before that are concerned that, this was fake, that it was a setup.
So yeah.
We already got that.
Look, but if someone else wants to spend 7 hours in a car, good luck. I don't want
to. Don't be questioning.
I spent 8 hours total because I stopped a couple of times to adjust cameras. And then I also midway through at somewhere around 250 miles, somewhere around there, I stopped to use a restroom and grab something to eat. So I was actually, it was 8 hours start to finish. My drive time was, little over 7 hours probably.
I remember years, not years ago, but a long time ago. And I didn't even know what car it was, but Kyle, you had done a range test where you'd gone out one way, before you lived where you live now, and you'd stopped, and then you had a break and you got back. And I remember, Tom, you made a video subsequently after that, maybe even testing the same car, a different version. And you didn't throw shade, but you were like, well, hey, Kyle's done this test already, but he did take a short break, and that's not really a pure range test. So I'm just going to say, I mean, you could have taken one for the team and not stopped at all.
We have to go back and see what exactly I said.
I'm sure there was, I'm sure there's a bottle you could have put in, you know. I mean,
Kyle, didn't you sleep? Well, didn't you do half of it one day and then like?
No, it was a short break. No,
I don't even know what test this could be. I don't remember ever stopping.
I don't know. I think
stops.
I thought my memory was, and maybe I was wrong, that you drove. This was when you were in North Carolina. One of the cars you like. Remember when you had two houses at some point or whatever? I think you drove to one of your places, and swear, I think you parked it and then finished the range test in the morning.
I don't think I would ever do that.
You wouldn't do that.
We've got to find out what video that was.
I'm not sure.
If that happened, that's amateur style. I would bet money I never did that. Or at least
we got to go back and figure out which one it was.
I don't know. I mean,
the only video I can think of that we did a sort of range test with an overnight was when we towed with the Audi e-tron, but that was a charging stop overnight at home because we were going from the track to Raleigh, and so we stopped at the house at the time. But yeah, at the end of the day, stops fundamentally make the test a little bit inaccurate, slightly, but you have to make sure there's no power draw in the car, you know, HVAC's off, there's no consumption happening. But of course, there is, you know, always going to be some phantom drain from letting the car sit, pumps will run. And so that does decrease from the overall range that we could do in one sitting. But a 20 or 30 minute stop midway on a car this long, I don't think anyone in the real world's ever going to go
right
in one go. And I don't like to use that excuse, but I think 1 30-minute break for these over 300-mile cars is fair.
I'm just messing.
I know. And I did, like Kyle said, I pulled the stop that I made was right off the highway. It was like a quarter mile off the highway, pulled off, powered down everything, locked the car, you know, so, you know, and then got back out and took over. So, and you know, you got to remember, even on the course that we took, did I maintain 70 miles an hour the entire time? No, I didn't. There's turnarounds that, you know, you have to slow down, get off the highway, you know, make a U-turn, go around.
Can you say what your average speed was? Normally for me, it's between 67 and 69.
Yeah. Surprisingly, the air doesn't tell you that in the infotainment. It doesn't have average speed for the trip. I was hoping that it would do that, but I am certain because this was so long. But the longer you drive at your set speed, it offsets those 5 minute turnarounds and everything. So, Kyle, I would imagine that I probably would have been like 69, you know, because it just drove so long at higher speeds. And now every now and then did I hit a patch for like 2 or 3 miles where I was down to 65 miles an hour? Yeah. That happens on these super long drives. But what I do then is, when we start, if I get a little patch where I see I have to slow down, I look at the miles I've driven. And then when I get back up to 70, I look at it again. I say, okay, for 2.5 miles, I drove at 65 miles an hour. Then I click the cruise control up 4 or 5 miles an hour higher than 70 for 2 miles. So I try to balance it. You know, it's not perfect. It's not in a totally controlled loop. But what I will say is we do a good job at this. And I think, you know, 98.5% of the drive was done at 70 miles an hour, you know, and right. that last 1%, what's that going to affect mile wise? You know, if you didn't. So, but, you know, it was something. It was just going on and on. You know what I wanted to do? And I wish I did, but I didn't. I just ran out of time before. I was going to buy like a couple of beards. a beard this long, then a beard this long, and every time I checked in, put on the beard, like, and at the end, I was going to be an old man and get out of the car like, oh, we finished the range test, because it felt like that. I mean, it never ended. You know, as you're doing these range tests, you're looking down at your state of charge, and so many times I look down, and it was like, you know, 72% or whatever, and I drive it for a while, and I'm like, let me look at it again. You know, I've got to be down to like 65%. I look, that's like 70%. I'm like, what the hell? I just drove 10 miles and lost 1%. You know, like, this thing's never going to end. Yeah, it was cool. Look,
I've got to say, I think Bill's got a point in the comments on the live stream. When will the video be out? I don't know if we can say to the minute, or whether we're going to schedule it or not, and people can tune in for that. But I do think it's going to be, I think, Tom, when you put this out as an independent journalist with a set of criteria that you've done hundreds of times before in terms of these range tests, and as you always say, no range test is put, like, you can't replicate and you can't make it perfect. But I do think it's going to be a really big deal in the industry, because this is going to be a new number, a new real number. Now, I know the EPA number is huge, but I think it's going to be a really big deal when your video drops. I think more than just Lucid fans are going to be really interested. I think it's going to get people talking. So when do you think the video is going to be out? When can we tune in?
So for sure by Sunday morning. It's possible I'll have it out tomorrow night. I'm still finishing some editing, and then I have to send it to Inside EV's, like the video managers. They have to approve it before it goes up on the Inside EV's YouTube channel, which is where it'll be on the Inside EV's YouTube channel. And then I'll write a corresponding article, which will just kind of be a summary, because nobody wants to read what I have to say. They want to look at the video.
So basically, you know, subscribe and ring that bell icon for notifications. Then you'll get a notification as soon as it comes out, and you'll be like one of the first to know.
So looking at either tomorrow, midday on to Sunday morning, but definitely by Sunday morning.
Right on.
I don't think I can wait until next Friday to have a chat about what we see. I wouldn't mind maybe even a follow-up video on the State of Charge YouTube channel, where you just turn on the camera and have a chat for 20 minutes about, you know, what happened, or maybe we can do a midweek podcast or something. But I can't wait to ask you about this.
So next week, as I mentioned earlier, Tuesday to Thursday, I'm going to be in San Francisco with Kia. But maybe we can figure out when we could do it around that. Maybe on Monday, or maybe while I'm out there, I could do it when I'm back at the hotel. I'd love to talk more about it now. We actually toiled over this. Should we announce it and everything? But the fact of the matter is, I go out, put the number out there. All the other news agencies are going to pick it up. They're going to write articles. They're going to post everything. And Inside EVs won't get the big story. You know, we'll be like last to report on it. That's why we got to hold off a little bit. But guys, it's coming this weekend.
Hey, Tom. Yeah. Were you able to do a charging test, sort of other variables a part of this time of the car?
Yes, I was. So when we finished up, I recorded a 0 to 100% on 150 kilowatt DC fast charger. If you remember, I did the last time I did it on the 350, and I haven't broken it down yet. Literally, I got home last night and I'm up now in the morning. But as I expected, the charging time isn't much different on a 350 unit or as compared to the 150 unit. Now, if you're going to plug in at a low state of charge and only charge for 10 or 15 minutes, okay, find a 350 if you can, because it just bang and jumps up to 300 kilowatts and just pumps those electrons in there. But in the case of using the 150 kilowatt DC fast charger, it was interesting. As soon as I plugged in, it was taken in 173. And it held that.
Yeah, well, those 150s are really 175s.
Yeah, so it took 173, and it held that beyond 50%. And then it started slowly ticking down. I didn't really monitor it the whole time, because I actually was doing a lot of other things with the car at that point to try to just get ready, because I had to pack and leave Arizona and everything. So I had Lucid actually had a representative meet me at the charging station, because at that point, after I was done, we drove back to the service center, and they had to drop me off at my hotel and then take it back to the service center. So I had that person pressing the button to reset the station for me, Kyle, like, you know, we have to do every 60 seconds when we're recording it. So, and that video I'll have up probably next week on my channel, State of Charge. And I'm going to compare, I'm going to put the charging session I did on 350 and the 150 side by side with the timer, so we could see exactly where it is and how far you go.
So your opinion, the curve is the same. They haven't updated that from the point when you tested to the cars now.
Well, Kyle, I have to put them side by side. It's hard to tell when it drops below 150. You know, if on both, it drops at the same time. But I do have some news. While I was DC fast charging, I talked to a Lucid rep that, Kyle, you know very well. And we were on the phone just chatting about charging curves. And he told me that he's going to have something for me soon, that not just for me, for all Lucid Air owners, that I think the customers are going to like. I don't really want to talk about that yet, but it has to do with charging, and it's going to be an improvement.
Ooh, okay. Right on. You heard it here first. All right. I was going to ask you something about that, but yeah, so that's going to be on your channel.
Can we just say it's possible to get a Lucid Air on these wheels, but you just shouldn't? They are so ugly.
Yeah, those, so these, the big wheels. These are the 19-inch Aero wheels. This is the car that was set up, the car that was certified at 520. If you get the 21-inch wheels, the wheels look so much nicer. But now you lose, I forget exactly, what is it, 490 or something? I forget.
It's such a shame. You won't be able to make it to your destination.
Yeah, it drops. But exactly like I said, it really makes no difference.
Yeah, just pretend that these wheels, the car is capable of doing what Tom did, but just don't buy that one. Buy the big wheels.
So this is pretty impressive. Martin, you know, I'm not sure, I don't want to mispronounce the gentleman's name. Jan?
Jan Tor.
He's in Norway, I believe, and he's going to be driving the Lucid next week and 29 other or 30 other EVs as well. So he's a regular reviewer, and I forget his position over there, but he's deep into the EVs, got a lot of knowledge about them.
We should have him on the show.
E-Mobility Norway is an educational outreach organization that works with organizations and individuals and is an advocacy organization. He just got a Volvo C40 in Scandi blue, I think it's the blue one he's got. It's just, that's nice. Okay. I mean, I know.
They won't have the Lucid there.
The XC40, yeah, the XC40 I think is more practical, but the C40, I mean, I like the look of it, but hey, so I think that's what he's driving at the moment. So
right, great car, just buy the boxy one.
Right. So just to clarify, he won't have the Lucid over there in Norway, but he's got driving like 30 cars. Like, I don't know, we don't think we get that many cars here in the U.S. So and Norway has like it's like an early access sort of thing for Europe. Even for Europe, it's got all the electric cars from like NIO is there already. XPeng is there.
Their battery swap station just opened.
That's true. Wow, yeah. That was a big story this week.
Huge band and trombone.
Right? Like literal fanfare.
Yeah.
That's great.
I see in the comments a couple people are asking to Tom, you need to range test the Mercedes EQS 450 Plus. I had one scheduled for February 2nd. A week-long loan. I just got the text message while I was in Arizona from the company that provides the cars. There's like always a company that's a go-between between you and the manufacturer. You typically don't get the loaners directly from the company. And they pulled it. They said Mercedes is taking the car back from them.
Really?
Wow. And they've only had it for a couple of weeks. Huh. So no information why. It could be that they just want to allocate it to a different region. I'm so mad.
It's probably a marketing thing or something going on.
Maybe they need to update it or something.
But Kyle, they just got it here a couple of weeks ago.
It's not uncommon to see that.
They had it scheduled for me and a whole bunch of other journalists here on the East Coast. And it's being pulled. So, yeah, I'm really disappointed. I don't know when I can do that.
EQS 450 Plus. And we didn't do a range test on it, but we did a charging test on it. We also did a charging test on XC40, both of which I don't think we've posted yet. I actually don't know where the footage is. It might be lost. But we spent the whole night. And they're both very interesting charging cars. And I've been trying to figure out where we put the footage, which was such a disaster. So may have been a waste of our time.
But speaking of highly anticipated range tests, 70-mile-an-hour range tests, Tom, you're doing the Hyundai Ioniq 5 sometime soon?
Yeah, I'm going to have the Ioniq 5. The week after. I was supposed to get the EQS, and then when they came to pick up the EQS, drop off the Ioniq 5. So second week, and I'm going to have it somewhere around the second week of February. So towards the end of February, I'll have that video up on the range test on the Ioniq 5.
I've been seeing all different kinds of reports from customers and different things about the Ioniq 5 range, and so I'd like to see what our baseline is really.
Well, it's going to be a cold weather.
It's going to be a cold weather one, yeah.
Because here in New Jersey, I mean, right now it's single digits. It's been single digits for a while, so it's going to be a cold weather range test. We'll have to take that into consideration.
But that's going to be really interesting because our friend Forrest just took one on a 1,500-mile trip and said his range was horrible. Like low 2 miles per kilowatt hour and not even all in freezing conditions. It was, 40, 50.
And Hyundai is always so good with efficiency. You know, the Ioniq that I tested it, we did the range test on the 2020 Ioniq, not Ioniq 5. And that's
old school Ioniq.
That still has the highest efficiency of any electric vehicle we've tested, including the Lucid. It beat what I got on the Lucid Air, because I averaged Geez, it was in the high. It might even have been 5 miles per kilowatt hour.
But it's so lightweight.
It was. I think it was 5 miles per kilowatt hour. I averaged on that, which is nuts.
It will be
at 70 miles an hour.
But it's a small car and it's got a light battery with no air water cooling.
I understand you can't. Yeah. It's not apples to apples, but I just wanted to point out that had the best efficiency. Next to that was the Tesla Model 3 that I range test twice, a 2019 and a 2021. And both of those, we averaged 4.25 miles per kilowatt hour. So that was the second highest after the Ioniq. We'll see where the Lucid falls in.
I wonder if there's a way we can figure what's going on with the Ioniq 5, why it's disappointing people with the range, and maybe it's something that Hyundai can improve or fix over the air.
Well, I just want to know why it has a 50-mile range difference. Nears makes no difference between rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive when it disconnects the front motor. ID4 doesn't even disconnect the front motor. It's a SRI motor, so they can shut it off. It's an induction motor, but it's only 10 miles difference. So what's going on, Hyundai? Yeah. I've been asking them. They're like, they said it had performance-oriented inverters, which makes almost no sense because your efficiency at low, whatever. The rear motor power output is slightly different, but I think it's the same unit both ways. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is. What other reasons did they say? They said the all-wheel drive is like sport-tuned or something like that. It was just like odd responses. And really, we just need to test them. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
because in the real world, it may not actually be a 50-mile difference or 45-mile difference. I can't imagine it would, but EPA tests the car. You have to submit your data in key-up setting, which is when you turn the car on, not adjusting any buttons. And even in that mode, it disconnects the front motor under light load. And so my guess is maybe the data that was supplied to the EPA was with the motor connected, or that software wasn't done, or something's going on there that doesn't seem to translate to the real world, but I don't know.
Right. Porsche Porsche made those improvements this week. So here we just got the Sport Turismo launched and all the variants of that this week. So
right, it's no longer GTS.
Yeah, so there's Taycan, there's Cross Turismo, so a bit wider and a bit higher, and it looks like it could go across a bumpy field occasionally. And then there's the Sport Turismo, and that came in higher in terms of the range than any other Taycan, because the Taycan 4S Sport Turismo with the front motor is now the longest rated Taycan at 498 kilometers. And again, Porsche just saying it's only about another 10 kilometers over the last year, but we've just worked out better ways to de-energize the front motor. So it's now almost completely de-energized, apart from when you want regen, in which case you've got both motors regenning. So they just got a little bit better in lots of areas. They said they're not going to retest EPA. They're not going to give it new ratings, which is very Porsche. They're like, yeah, this is the old number, but the new car goes way further.
Yeah, they're going to wait till the mid-cycle refresh of Taycan to recertify the car, is my guess. Also, with, I think it's WMA6 is the new software for that car, no longer disconnects the rear motor even in eco mode. So it runs all-wheel drive all the time. And as Martin said, it's less wear and tear and more efficient to just optimize the motors connected. They've also done a whole bunch. So the only cars that'll be certified with the new WMA6 software is going to be Sport Turismo. And then the others will also get the updates and go just as far. The sedan is still the longest range car. Yeah. It doesn't show on paper, which is the most Porsche thing ever, which I love. Yeah,
so that'll be almost 300 miles. We'll have to get a Sport Turismo to range test too as well, I guess, right?
Well, that's the performance-oriented
version. Yeah, but the sedan's still going to be the longest range. So what we really need is a 4S sedan or a rear-wheel drive sedan.
Right. But just the chance to drive the Sport Turismo, I think, would be great.
Yeah, of course. Jordan's driven it. Tom's driven it.
Right.
What did you think of any range testing?
I didn't know. I butchered the range with my driving, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Right. I love it.
No, I did too. We had a halfway point where we met at Willow Springs Racetrack, actually, when we did the media drive, and there was, I don't know, six other people in the pool with me, and I was the only one that, when my car arrived at Willow Springs, they had to take it and charge it up because I wouldn't have been able to make it back to the hotel, because at the midway point I was at like 30% state of charge, and I think everybody else pulled up at like 55 to 60% state of charge.
That's what I saw too.
And I was purposely doing that because I wanted, on the return trip, there was a DC fast charger, and I wanted to roll in on fumes and then record a DC fast charging session. but they wouldn't let me. They're like, no, you won't make it to the electrometer. I was like, yeah, I know how to optimize range. I'll make it. And then Calvin was like, Tom, just please let them charge it. And I'm like, okay, Calvin.
Yeah, because you were on the global launch, but Jordan did the US launch, so he got to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I went up Angeles Crest, and yeah, we all went to this like little lunch place on the backside of Angeles Crest for lunch, and everyone showed up with about like 50%, and I rolled in with 21%. And I got back to the charger at the end with, I think, 4% state of charge. So
nice. Proper. Right on.
Got it. Right. Five heart.
So are we ready to talk about some news?
I mean, we're already an hour in. Do we just say that?
It's not a big news week, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It's not a big news week, but there was a couple of interesting things that, you know, we should talk about. This week, the Florida RV Super Show took place, and there were a couple of different concepts that were revealed that I'd like to talk about. The first was the Winnebago eRV. Now, this is an all-electric RV based on the Ford Transit. It's not based on the eTransit from Ford, which is coming out soon, but it's the eTransit comes from the factory with a 68 usable kilowatt-hour battery. But this one was built on a regular transit converted by Lightning e-motors. That's just down the road from Kyle there in Colorado. In fact, I believe he may have seen this thing being put together, possibly. In any case, it has an 86 kilowatt hour battery and is said to be good for 125 miles of range while also powering all the onboard systems. Charging time is said to be around 45 minutes, which is pretty good. It is, as we said, a concept, so it's not going on sale exactly like in this form. It is the first public-facing product from Winnebago's Advanced Technology Group, and it was developed over a two-year period. Unlike a lot of traditional RVs, there's no LP gas or anything inside. Everything is electric. It's got a 350-volt water heater, a roof-mounted air conditioner, an induction stove, a marine-grade fridge. Kyle, are you familiar with this vehicle, and what are the chances we're going to see this on the Autospec Overlanding channel?
Yeah, so we'll try and film some videos with this. We know the guys at Winnebago and Lightning eMotors. I've watched this being built for the last 2 years. I just couldn't say anything. Really, last year and a half they've had it. We watched it roll in there, and it had a big Winnebago thing written across the windshield just when it was a shell, this exact unit. So, Okay. Yeah, this is something that we've been following, we've known about. It's not going to work. Sorry. It's 125-mile range. Right. Like, every charging station is going to be your house. And, you know, we had this Lightning e-motor system. We've taken it to the racetrack. We've tested their stuff. And what we tested seemed to not work very well. And we need to test it again because I think they've had some updates. But it would break down anytime we drove consistently over 55 miles an hour. It didn't DC fast charge. And overall, it was a pretty clunky experience. It did drift really well, though.
It did, yeah.
So
not quite ready for prime time.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, 86 kilowatt hours or 80 kilowatt hours? Yeah, battery
electric in a van just doesn't work. You know, I own a Winnebago product. I have a Winnebago Revel, one of those lifted Sprinters.
Right.
And I actually stayed in it last night. I love my Sprinter. I use it all the time.
Right.
But when I'm going on I-80 in Wyoming, near where I live, out west of California, which I do all the time, I'm getting hit with 60-mile-an-hour headwinds. My foot is welded to the floor, and I'm getting like 7 miles to the gallon with diesel. I'd get maybe 40 miles on a charge on a good day with this thing. Like, that just doesn't work. So what we really need is some sort of range extender solution. I love the idea of RVs and these Class B vans to have a large battery pack, because with my Sprinter, I have about 12 kilowatt hour, I think, of onboard storage, maybe 10, but it's not enough to run the air conditioning overnight. And right. So the benefit of this really is you can run all your electrics without thinking about it and then charge everything from a consistent fueled generator would be the best solution, in my opinion.
Right. Marty Walsh asks if it has solar integration. I believe this one had a couple panels, like small panels on the roof.
Yeah, they all do. Sure. It's like a couple hundred watts.
It's pretty negligible.
Even on my combustion Sprinter, just to keep the batteries level, you know, from the dip running the refrigerator overnight.
Yeah, and John Neff adds that it says it needs a 200 kilowatt hour battery minimum, and I tend to agree. That's
probably 400. It needs more.
I think so. So the first Hummer EV that gets crashed I think should be become the basis for an RV project. Maybe stick a couple Hummer batteries into that. That'd be 400 kilowatt hours. That would be a crazy amount of range, but also super heavy. I don't know.
Rich rebuilds to get on that.
Yeah, I think 200 kilowatt hour battery would be a pretty good place to start to see what happens with that. And if you build it with, you know, aerodynamics and lightness in mind, it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, but here's the idea. The reason you buy a van is to explore the country. And if feel limited in your exploration capabilities, well, then that's not luxury. Luxury is being able to go anywhere you want without thinking about it. So if you have a big-ass battery and a big-ass generator, let's say a 50-kilowatt, you know, consistent running, it just needs an i3 system just sized up. And then that's the perfect solution, I think.
Yeah, I think it's at least until batteries become, you know, smaller and can hold a lot more range in a small space and a small amount of, you know, lighter weight profile, that a range extender kind of makes sense. But
that's what this one, which if you're watching on YouTube and Twitch, is all about. One of the ones from Thor, which is there again. It's a concept. Excuse me. It's there. Take on a range extender, but with an integrated fuel cell. So again, you still can't charge it anywhere because you can't fill up with hydrogen anywhere. There's a handful of stations in the country, and at any one time, most of them aren't working. But it's an interesting design option, but just stick a petrol range extender in. You know what? Let's electrify as much as we can and be pragmatic about the rest. Right. And actually, if we're going to burn some stuff for the next few years, okay, well, not everything has to be pure electric at the drop of a hat. Let's do what we can where we can. And then this, because if you are just going between campsites to campsites and charging every night, well, then you can plug in presumably every night. And not all campsites are going to have DC fast charging, but, you know, you just need to give people the options. But 125, even 200 miles is not enough when you add in elevation, weather, etc. But
for most people, right?
You know, a fuel cell range extender sounds like the kind of thing that I think is done as a concept because it'll be reported on, and it'll be of interest to the people who like to drop into my social media and go, I think you'll find the future is hydrogen. If you knew anything about this, because you can fill up in 5 minutes, and you're like, you're right, you're absolutely right. Yeah, we're all going to be driving hydrogen cars.
Is that your impression of a person who's British, who's a nerd?
Yes, that's my impression of the people that complain to me about not covering hydrogen. I think you'll find the newspapers told me that it was a 5 minute fill up. Yes, you're absolutely right. I defer to you, dear expert. Just put a petrol range extender in it. But that was with the, I think, the Vision something. The Thor Vision, yeah.
Thor Vision. And so Thor Industries is a big company, and they own Airstream as well as a bunch of other companies. I believe they started Airstream was their first acquisition. But so they actually had two vehicles, and no one even talked about the one that we just mentioned here, the fuel cell range extended. It's built on a Ford Transit. It's kind of long. It's nice. But they did cover this other vehicle, and we did on Inside EVs, the Winnebago all-electric RV concept. It debuts with 125 miles of range. That's the other one.
Airstream,
I've got that wrong. Airstream looks to the future with Eastream electric camper trailer. So the other camper concept that made its debut in Florida this week that we're excited about, or that I'm excited about at least, was the Eastream travel trailer concept. So this looks pretty much like a traditional Airstream trailer. It's got like nice little blue lights along the bottom there to tell you it's special. But it's got its own drivetrain in it, though, to help it propel itself so your tow vehicle doesn't take a big hit on range. And that's regardless of whether your tow vehicle is a Tesla Model X, like you see in their promotional video here, or a regular, like a gas vehicle, because gas vehicles always also take a big hit on range when they're towing something. So it's got two motors, one for each wheel, and it's got an 80 kilowatt hour battery in the floor of the thing. It makes 242 horsepower and 132 feet-pound of torque. I think that might...
What do you even need a car for? Just drive this thing around.
Right? So it's also got 900 watts of solar cells integrated into the roof, which is not, you know, huge, but it's not nothing either. That's like maybe 10 kilowatt hours a day.
This is so perfect because when you roll up to a campsite, just so a lot of people know, they have typically a lot of the bigger ones, they have a NEMA 520 wall outlets, a NEMA 1450 and a 1030. So right. You can plug the trailer into your 30 amp, the car into the 50 amp, any extra accessories that you don't want to run off the trailers into a 110. And that's the typical layout for a large campsite. And right. So it's amazing. I truly believe this is the future of trailers for EVs. The big question is going to be the cost, because Airstreams, even in their cheapest form, are 40, right. 50 grand.
Right.
So this is going to be $100,000+.
I love the idea of showing up to a campsite and comparing horsepower numbers on your trailer. Right.
So this also has a really interesting feature. So after you like disconnect it from your car, you have it on the three wheels. It's got the regular two wheels and the little stabilizer wheel in the front. But then you can like move it around the campsite on its own, like with an app on your phone. Or your iPad or whatever.
Yeah, that's so cool.
That's really cool. Or at a charging station, I believe you could, you know, if you unhook your car and you,
absolutely,
you back it up into the spot for at the charge
the
station.
The best way to travel with these is just through the middle of the night when no one's at the chargers. You just roll up, plug everything in. If someone happens to show up, you can move your stuff. But we really need a focus on charging stations for pull through sites.
Yeah.
With, you know, Norway has a lot of this because of snow management. They got to push the snow out of the way.
Right.
But it's just when you go look at supercharger design in Norway, they just have these big parking lots with tons of posts everywhere. Why can't we do that here? We got even more space.
Yeah.
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 In Canada as well.
It's clever technology in terms of the trailer monitoring the tow vehicle, you know, hundreds of times a second, and those motors responding, because an electric motor can respond quickly enough to be like, right. Okay, do I need to go a little bit faster, freewheel? Do I need to do a little bit of regen and brake? So working out what the tow vehicle is doing and providing just the right amount of power or slowing down to mirror that vehicle. It's really clever, and I don't think is beyond the wild. It's a concept again, but beyond what is possible if they can get the price down. But then again, right. You know, these things are meant to be expensive playthings, aren't they?
Well, it's pretty polished. I think there's a lot of speculation this is going to go into production too.
Even if it's 200 grand, they'll sell everyone they can make.
Yeah,
for a while. I was kind of curious too. I couldn't find any information about, I'm sure it has regen, but I don't know what kind of, like, if it's like an 800 volt system or a 400 volt system. I was kind of,
it's probably a 400 volt system.
It was developed by ZF, Friedrichshafen AG.
Yes.
In conjunction with Thor.
Yeah, and they was we're in.
Thank you for doing it the right way,
Dominic. This is America. interesting. The first use of a ZF product for a U.S. product was on Newell Coaches, which is a Oklahoma-based, really high-end coach manufacturer, and so they build their own chassis. They do the active steerable tag axles on Class A's. Oh, nice. But that was the first use of a ZF product here in the US, and so they have the longest running relationship. And of course, like BMW uses their transmissions and everyone else. They're a huge company.
Right.
They're like one of the biggest providers to OEMs that like nobody knows about. Right. They actually sponsored me going to one of the Formula One races. It might have been when I went to Chile. I forget which one. And, you know, as part of that, you know, I had to sit through a presentation of what ZF is doing and who they're working with and the components they make. And I was floored, like, you know, at the amount of components and transmission things that they make. And they're working on two-speed transmissions for electric vehicles now. And like the amount of things that they make for cars that are existing on the road, I had no idea. So like I came away from that thinking like this is the biggest company that I don't know about.
Right.
But one question I have about the trailer, will it have summon mode, Dominic?
I mean, it could have.
It should have.
It could have.
But you know what I like about this is that these companies that are making like ancillary products for vehicles, like trailers, and even if you want to talk about Work Sport, who makes snow covers, like they're now starting to think about integrating their products into electric vehicles. So, you know, when you start to see this, you know that they're realizing also this is where the market's going. So we need to make our products work well with electric vehicles. And they might even not just work well with the electric vehicles, they might improve the electric vehicles. So, you know, it's really cool that we have companies like this putting out stuff that is going to pair well with electrics.
I would hire one of these for a holiday, no worries, because, you know, a lot of people do have an RV, as a second or third vehicle. You know, it sits on their driveway with the boat that they use twice a year. But actually, and that is a massive waste of resources if you're talking about an 80 kilowatt hour pack. We haven't got enough batteries in the world as it is, and we're not going to have for a long time. But if you had one of these for hire, and you could guarantee that they were always on the road or being used,
right,
like 24/7, like someone's going to hire this for 2 weeks, go across the country, and then in 2 weeks' time, another family takes it out. Well, then it's always getting used, high utilization rates. I think it makes sense.
So this is the other thing. So we're talking about, it's probably going to be expensive, and then, people could have like an 80 kilowatt hour battery sitting in their driveway doing nothing for most of the year. So the thing is, and I didn't see this in the promotional materials, but it would make sense to me to integrate this into your house. So this could be like in your driveway, it'd be like your huge power wall. Or if you live somewhere where your utility has a time of use billing operation, so you could run electricity from your storage battery during the peak hours and save money, and then charge it back up when the electricity is cheap at night and save you, and that would help offset the extra cost, and also give you that people like having an uninterrupted power supply in case of.
Absolutely. And that all works and sounds great, Tom, but you have to understand there'll be a great expense at integrating this into home backup system.
Yes.
You need to get a transfer switch. You need to get an inverter.
Right.
You're talking about thousands of dollars because I'm actually doing a deep dive video on the Ford.
Yeah, but Tom just wrote a check for $200,000 to buy this thing. $200,000 into your house.
I know, but Dominic's talking about saving money on 10 cents a kilowatt hour. You know, like the return on investment, you're not going to get it on saving, if you're buying your electricity at, when it's cheapest, and then you're returning it to the grid, or using your backup power when it's most expensive.
Right.
You're talking about if you've dumped $7,000 or $8,000 into your house setup just to get this backup power system, that's a lot of kilowatt hours.
That's a good point. We're talking about saving
three or four, maybe 10 cents a kilowatt hour. So.
And if you can afford this to begin with, you're probably not worried too much about that.
Don't justify fun with numbers. That's
this
when
is just
downhill.
A liberal pipe dream. You all are just a liberal pipe dream.
Let us have our fun here, all right?
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, William's point of you could actually tow it with anything, and you could make it look ridiculous. Like hook it up to an e-bike and just like be biking down the road with this, being like, I got this.
Yeah,
I got
some. Tom weight's still going to be heavy, but I would love to tow it.
Actually, there's
I've been doing leg day at the gym. I've got this. It's fine. Don't worry.
Your acceleration could be faster with this attached, depending on the vehicle.
That's true. Actually, there was something in the materials saying something about it didn't need to have a special kind of weight thing. It wasn't as heavy on your cars as something. You could use a lighter vehicle than normally for some reason.
Maybe more balanced, but it's so heavy. There's going to be tongue weight unless there's a front tire on the thing.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know exactly. Yeah, I'm not.
Anyway,
I'm not a travel trailer expert. All right. So anything else we want to talk about? Oh, yes. The VW. Volkswagen is bringing back the E-Up. Volkswagen E-Up was canceled in September of 2020, despite it selling pretty well. And there were rumors that Volkswagen wasn't actually making a profit selling them. I don't know. But reports from Germany Now claim that the VW E-Up is coming back in mid-February to Germany, at least. And this is according to an electric car rental company called Nextmove. And they put videos out that are pretty interesting, but often in German. So they announced that the E-Up will come back in the Style Plus version, offering a range of roughly 250 kilometers or 155 miles for €26,500. That's around $30,000 US. But with the incentives in Germany, that would be about €17,000, which is a good price, I believe, for an electric car, even a subcompact like the E-Up. I don't know. Martin, are you up to speed on this?
Yeah, I mean, look, the E-Up, it's a small car. It's a small city car. I've read those things as well about the E-Up and the E-Golf both losing money when they sold every single one of them. And that's why they wanted to move to the ID cars, the MEB platform, which they proudly said they made money from the very first one of those they built. That's why they wanted to move to them. But the E-Golf in Germany kept selling, and the E-Up everywhere kept selling because, 26,000 euros, but add the German incentive, 17,000 euros. They are going to upgrade the tech, I think, a little bit. To something like, it was like 140, maybe the article says 145, 150 miles. I forget what it was. I think
it's a pretty basic car.
like a little bit better when it comes back, but still, it's part of that trio of cars of the Citigo EIV, the Seat Mii electric, and that. But you know, not for everyone, but it appears enough for enough people. Now, this will fill the gap then until we have a small, whether it's the ID, I think the concept car was the ID Life, but the small city car on the ID platform, which won't be out for a couple of years, then this fills the gap quite nicely.
And, Martin, can you pull that photo up again? That one. I sat in that exact car and I was so happy.
Oh, yeah?
Right.
I mean, it's great. It's
got metal in the dash, right?
Everything was amazing. It's got a glass rear hatch like an i3. It's just the coolest little fun thing.
It's so fun. I should note the title of this article does have an important typo. The E up exclamation mark is the full title of the car.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yes.
Don't forget the exclamation mark.
You got to put the exclamation point.
Right on.
So so great that it's coming back.
So what's the how much cheaper is this than an i3 or ID3?
Yeah,
significantly.
Yeah, by so the cheapest ID3. I mean, you can buy a used one now because they've been out almost a couple of years. But in terms of new, I don't know what you get into an ID3 at the very, very base level. 32, 33. So, look, significantly cheaper.
Yeah, but the base ID3 is not that pleasant. You really need to get some nice stuff on it. But the E-Up's got a sense of character because it's meant to be cheap and cheerful.
Right, right. Cheapest chips.
Yes,
tasty, it's
great. Tastiest chips. All right. We were talking about NIO earlier, and I just thought I'd mention that they apparently they're leasing a bigger San Jose office in California for their U.S. headquarters and R&D center. So if you're looking to get a NIO in the U.S., that's still a possibility eventually, it looks like.
Well, they have them here. We actually met a guy who we probably can't talk about on the podcast who drives one under an engineering loan in the U.S. every day, was really cool. Awesome dude.
The ES8?
We can't say anymore. He has an ES8, the big SUV, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so, yeah.
But he's just driving around California as his car. I've been to their current offices and met the guy who made Nomi. They do all their software development in San Jose.
Okay.
And yeah, it's pretty cool.
I mean, did they do all their software development for the cars in China as well?
Yep. It's all done here.
Oh, interesting. That's backwards.
I don't understand why, but they also had the really cool race car thing in there. And
right.
It was like a nice office space. We had EP9? Lunch in their cafe. We just went over to like take a look at Neo's. They're like, oh, hey, come on in. We know you guys.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Oops.
Tom, it's because the talent is here.
Yeah, we got all the software guys here.
That's right. Yeah.
It's true. That's why they do it here. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And you know, we're just seeing the beginning of this. But within 10 years, you know, Chinese cars are going to be commonplace everywhere. I know a lot of people say no. And we hear stories about Martin with, you know, his Chinese cars leaking water and everything, you know. But I'm telling you, they're making incredible advancements with build quality. And they're basically like skipping internal combustion and going all in on electric vehicles. Right. And within the next decade, it's going to be like what we saw with Japanese cars in the early 70s.
Totally
they're going to
agree.
Go from they're nowhere to just being everywhere in a decade.
We're already seeing it in Europe. I was next to an iWays. Is that how you say it?
iWays, yes.
Yeah, we saw those at charging stations. We saw Xiaopengs. We saw everything around because we were there for the IAA auto show, and there was just that's a Chinese car. That you go to Norway, you see tons of Chinese cars. It's insane.
Right? Yeah Norway's really cool. Norway's the place to be if you into Chinese cars.
So basically, we'll have a lot of cars filling up like boats.
I'll happily buy any of them because I suspect, at the end of the day, I mean, it doesn't matter.
I suspect they'll have to maybe start manufacturing in the U.S. too, you know, in order to sell them here
to avoid
price.
Tariffs. They'll have to.
There's some of the big guys are already looking. They're already scouting for locations. I mean,
Volvo is owned by Geely, and they're opening or they're doing some EV manufacturing now in North Carolina, and so we'll be seeing
Charleston.
The replacement for the big Volvo SUV is going to be electric, and the Polestar 3?
5, 4?
The 3. That's
I don't like this whole 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 naming thing.
It gets confusing. Everyone's doing the same thing.
Wrong too is VinFast.
Yep.
Because they get a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're all SUVs. They all pretty much do the same thing.
What are they going to call the next version?
Yeah, I don't know. Right. And so, the name.
ID 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So I think that brings us to the end of our show.
I'd like to answer a quick question before we cut out. Nathan Green asked a little while ago when I was talking about the Ford's F-150 Lightning's intelligent backup power.
Yes.
Ford has on their website that qualification that if you want to use backup power, you need to have a 320-amp service panel or more, which very few people in the U.S. have. I mean, you basically have a 400-amp. You need to have a four, they're telling you you need to have a 400-amp service, which is crazy for residential. And some of the newer homes have that. Bigger homes have it, but almost no standard homes are built with that. So a lot of people were asking me, Tom, you know, find out if this is true. And I'm going to have the full video up this week, but I will answer this question. No, you don't need to have a 320-amp service on your house, even though it states it on Ford's website. I have it directly from the Ford engineers that work on this, and their answer was basically, well, like, you know, we kind of put it up there to manage expectations, to let people know that, you know, they probably can't have this if they have a 100-amp main on their house, and that you do have to have power. And they had people do calculations, and they came up with 320 amps is what you should have, because you have to take into consideration the power draw that your house already has, and this is going to be an additional 100-amp circuit. So the fact of the matter is, many people that have, say, a 200-amp service will be able to use Ford intelligent backup power. Once you get under 200 amps, it's dicey, because let's say you have 150-amp main, you need a 100-amp circuit to have this run, and that's giving you 50 amps for the rest of your house. So,
or you could just do what I do and ignore code. Just throw all the breakers in there.
No, you can't do that. You cannot do that. Kyle is talking funny.
I know.
He was drinking this morning. He was drinking last night. He's joking. It's a big joke.
Just remember not to run the dryer and the car at the same time.
Don't do any of that stuff. Follow code. Get a licensed electrician. Do all the installations, and you'll be just fine.
So is that video going to be on State of Charge or on Inside EVs?
It's going to be on State of Charge on my YouTube channel, hopefully this week.
All right. So subscribe.
My priority is getting this Lucid range test video in the can and for Inside EVs to approve, and we'll have it up this weekend.
Awesome. All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomolog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And Jordan, what's your?
Jordan_Schieffer.
Jordan_Schieffer, and I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.